Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Do you know a student getting ready to go to college? Or are you looking at going back to school yourself? The Woodward Hines Education Foundation and the Get to College program help more Mississippians get to and through college to get certificates and degrees that lead to meaningful employment. They offer free college planning advice, including hands-on FAFSA completion assistance through in-person or virtual appointments. Visit gettocollege.org to learn more.
Good morning. It's 8:30 on Wednesday, April 24th. I'm Desiree Frazier. This is Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio. On today's show, Mississippi legislators trying to reach an agreement on Medicaid expansion as the session nears an end. Then, nearly 4 in 10 people in the U.S. live in counties with unhealthy levels of air pollution. How do counties in Mississippi stack up? We'll tell you about that. Plus, a former Mississippi politician is sharing stories of his experience in the state legislature through a short film. This is Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio. Lawmakers continue to disagree about Medicaid expansion for thousands of working Mississippians who can't afford private insurance. The House wants to make the earnings cap up to 138% of the federal poverty level. An individual earning up to $20,000 annually would qualify. Senate lawmakers want to make the earnings cap lower at exactly the federal poverty line. That individual would qualify who earns up to $15,000 a year. The House plan could increase Medicaid rolls by 200,000 people, the Senate closer to 80,000. Here's Republican Representative Missy McGee of Hattiesburg. She chairs the House Medicaid Committee.
I believe the biggest obstacle for us to address is the federal poverty level as to where that how far we can take that. The House is committed to drawing down the maximum federal dollars available. We don't believe that, to have the federal government being willing to pay 90% and the state pay 10%, we believe that we hear a lot in this Capitol about we're going to run it like a business. You know, we're going to run the state like a business. And I don't know many businesses that wouldn't take a deal I'm going to give you 90%. All you have to give me is 10 back. And so that position, getting up to 138% of the federal poverty level is critical to us. We believe that that is the most responsible way to run this program, and in terms of taxpayer dollars, that we would maximize that and enroll the most people doing the most good.
Senate Republicans say they're unwilling to budge at this point on the work requirement. It would need a waiver from the federal government. McGee and other House Republicans say they don't want a work requirement. They do want one, rather, but they don't want the measure to die if it's not granted.
We're not willing to not have a program just because maybe 20%, I'm just throwing that number out, perhaps aren't working or can't work. Maybe there's somebody in some small rural town where there's, 20 or 30 jobs. They don't have a car. They can't get to a job. There are a lot of reasons why that low percentage of the population may not be able to work at that moment anyway. And so, but we do believe that this is a program for working Mississippians. I mean, we in our bill, we have a work requirement in the first section. But we are not willing to hold back 80% of the hardworking Mississippians because we fear that maybe a small percentage somehow may game the system or something like that.
Governor Tate Reeves disapproves of any measures for Medicaid expansion. Senator Bryce Wiggins of Pascagoula is one of the conferees. He says the Senate's plan is their only option for passing a veto-proof bill.
While we're talking brass tacks, we have to realize what the votes are. And I think y'all have done that by moving a little bit, because the Senate votes on what some of the media have called an austere program is what it is, and we have a veto-proof vote right now. So I think that those are things that we have to acknowledge that we're trying to get to and that we're having to deal with in this. The numbers are going to tend to be where they are. So I think, yes, getting back to where working this out is a good thing. But there are people in this state who want to see it fiscally responsible. But we've heard from preachers. We've heard from doctors. We've heard from the State Medical Association, Mississippi Manufacturers Association, the MEC. We've heard from groups all across this state who support us trying to find a solution. It's not easy, but I think we're trying to get there. I think this is a first step, and we need to try to work on this to get there.
During the conference committee meeting, senators offered no new proposals for Medicaid expansion. House lawmakers did offer one, where the earnings cap would be in line with the Senate's plan. It also would create a subsidy program for people who earn between 100 and 135% of the federal poverty level. Senate lawmakers shot that down. However, Senate Medicaid Committee Chairman Kevin Blackwell, a Republican from South Haven, says it's significant the two chambers are talking.
While I realize our efforts here today may have not resulted in a compromise, I think at least we've, despite our differing opinions, have begun a dialogue that has not occurred in this building since the Affordable Care Act was passed in 2010. Despite it taking us so long to get here, I believe we're moving in the right direction. And I, for one, hope we continue. I view our situation as a journey. I can recall a Chinese proverb that says that every journey begins with a single step. And in the House's case, I think you guys want to jump in a sports car and zoom right to expansion, you know, damn the roadblocks and get there. Those of us in the center want to take sort of a more slower approach to that.
I don't feel like we have been in a Ferrari very long. I think we have been waiting 10 years. So we believe that the hardworking Mississippians we don't need to push the cough anymore.
Here's the bottom line. Going back to the journey, both chambers are off the porch. We've both taken steps forward, something that it has not occurred, and I don't think a lot of people would ever thought would have occurred here. If your position is going to be your way or the highway, and no pun intended, you're going to put us right back on the porch. So what I'm asking you to do is I'm encouraging you to go back to your side, to your members. You know, you sat in our deliberation. Consider joining us in the journey. The Senate wants to move forward, not backwards. And I'm just saying, take a step with us. In the years to come, we can continue to work on this and refine it so we can provide health care for our hardworking Mississippians. If this dies, it's going to be harder next year for us to get here. And damn sure it's not getting brought up in the next 2 years.
Lawmakers are still far from reaching a deal on Medicaid expansion, but have agreed to another meeting, although a date and time hasn't been set yet. Coming up, nearly 4 in 10 people in the U.S. live in counties with unhealthy levels of air pollution. How do counties in Mississippi stack up? You'll hear about that. This is Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio.
Family owned.
You know, I respect my dad a lot. I know it wasn't easy when he passed the baton to me. But in the end, he realized it was the best thing for the business to sometimes look at things from different colored lenses.
Family Owned, a legacy leadership podcast, exploring family businesses who make up the backbone of the American economy. Listen now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or go to mpbonline.org.
Want to keep up with MPB? Go to mpbonline.org, or you can find us on social media on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at MPB Online.
What can you do with the MPB Radio app? Listen live, hear local news, view the schedule, make a contribution, listen to shows on demand, and interact with social media. Get the app for your smartphone now.
This is MPB Think Radio. Mississippi is our mission.
This is Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio. I'm Desiree Frazier. A new report from the American Lung Association measures the quality of air and how pollution affects health. According to the State of the Air report, air quality across the country is improving since the Clean Air Act passed decades ago. But here in the Gulf South, there's still work to be done. The report looked at the amount of ground-level ozone and particle pollution in the air throughout the U.S. While the Jackson metro area is among the nation's cleanest for ozone pollution, high levels of brown particle pollution resulted in a failing grade. Danny MacArthur of the Gulf States Newsroom talks with Ashley Lyerly with the American Lung Association about those findings and what it means for overall public health.
Nationally, just want to highlight that we really are seeing improvements in our air quality across the nation and in even in individual state levels. And I think a lot of that is due to the implementation of the Clean Air Act federally. But certainly we know that in states and certain metro areas, we're not seeing that, same trend as across all categories of air pollution. So for Jackson's metro area, for their air quality this year, we did see that Jackson did rank in the cleanest among the nation for ozone, which is wonderful. But then unfortunately we saw for year-round particle pollution, the Jackson metro area ranked 29th worst, which was the sort of second worst in the Southeast. And this is the sort of same category that we saw the Jackson metro area sort of rank in last year's report as well.
So I guess maybe talk a little bit about what factors would kind of lead to that kind of ranking.
We get our data from the EPA, which is quality assured data, and this report looks at a three-year period. So it's 2020, 2021, and 2022. And so for year-round particle pollution, obviously, we're looking at, regular emissions from vehicles. We're looking at emissions from chemical plants, other industrial factors. So it's year-round particle pollution is sort of that day in and day out exposure that individuals might have. And so, we obviously know that there is industry based in the metropolitan area. People are using their vehicles and obviously which are causing vehicle emissions, diesel trucks and other cars, heavy duty cars that are contributing to the unhealthy air quality for year round particle pollution in the Jackson area.
I guess you maybe talk a little bit about what role do you think some of the EPA's like new standards for particle pollution could have on air quality going forward?
The Lung Association, for the many years have been advocating for stronger standards and for the implementation of the Clean Air Act. And I think the evolution of air quality from the 1960s to where we are today certainly has improved because of the implementation of the Clean Air Act and the sort of implementation of stronger regulations as it relates to, year-round particle pollution and even really ozone that I know with the Lung Association we're certainly advocating for. And so as you referenced, the EPA just recently implemented and released stronger standards for year-round particle pollution. And so we know that we use that evaluation, that new ranking in this year's report. And we know that that, impacts where people might fall as it relates to a passing versus a failing grade. But what we hope is those stronger standards will result in better air quality because we have restrictions that'll be put in place for certain industries and things that so that they won't be able to emit as much air pollutants into the air and ultimately impacting air quality.
And then I guess what does it kind of tell you needs to be done on a policy level to address like both types of pollution?
ultimately, we were very excited to see that the EPA did, you know, in February, release a new standard for year-round particle pollution. We strongly believe that we need to have the same sort of stronger standard for ozone as well, so that we begin to have ways to sort of clean up our air pollution.
Also talk about, like, y'all had seen some improvements in air quality in some places in the U.S. And so, like, one of those places I saw was, like, in Alabama, the Montgomery metro area. What does that tell you for, like, cities where they are getting good grades?
I think certainly for air quality, there are a lot of things that play into factor. Topography is one, location of the state, what type of industries you have in your metro area, and then also where your air quality monitors are. So, you know, for just as an example for the Jackson area, you know, Jackson, Mississippi area, you know, there's only one air quality monitor in the metro area. So, you know, the data and the understanding of the air quality is only so good as the actual monitors that we have there, the data to be able to assess it.
Given some of the Gulf South demographics, can you talk about what groups are usually the most at risk for air pollution and what can be done?
A great question. I think certainly, you know, anyone that have lungs, which is most humans, are susceptible to, you know, breathing in unhealthy air. It obviously depends on where you're located, how your air quality is, but we certainly know that exposure to unhealthy air can make you susceptible to premature death. You know, we know that individuals who have chronic diseases, which are many in the Southeast, unfortunately, you know, those with lung disease or heart disease are certainly going to be more susceptible to having issues. So we see that unhealthy air can lead to asthma attacks, it can lead to heart attacks or stroke. And we certainly know that particle pollution also long-term exposure to particle pollution can lead to lung cancer.
Are there kind of like any gaps in data that you think needs to be addressed by policymakers?
So the Lung Association, certainly we would advocate for increased air quality monitors. I think investing in those monitors so that we can fully understand where we are as it relates to air quality. I think also, you know, just making sure that there are policies at the state level to allow for individuals to make that transition to energy efficient vehicles, energy efficient appliances, and those sorts of things that we know ultimately will impact our air quality.
Ashley Lyerly is Senior Director of Advocacy at the American Lung Association. Coming up, a former Mississippi politician is sharing stories of his time in the state legislature through a documentary. This is Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio.
Wednesdays on MPB Think Radio help solve your problems. Fix It 101 takes your DIY questions and listens to your proud accomplishments at 9 a.m. Everyday Tech explains tech news and solves your gadget problems at 10 a.m. The Original Southern Remedy covers all types of medical issues that affect your life at 11 a.m. Our phone lines open up after Mississippi Edition. Continue to listen on MPB Think Radio.
I'm Celeste Headley. Instead of using huge container ships to move goods across the ocean, why not go old school? In Costa Rica, boat builders are building a wooden schooner.
It has had the sweat of 250 people from all around the world working and bending the wood, assembling it.
Wind-powered shipping, next time on Here and Now.
Today at noon on MPB Think Radio.
This is Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio. I'm Desiree Frazier. A former Mississippi politician is sharing stories of his experience in the state legislature and the loss he faced at the end of his final term in office. It's all in a documentary airing today at the two Mississippi museums in Jackson. The short film is called Steve Holland, Jesus Was a Democrat. It'll be screened at noon with follow-up discussions. Our Kobe Vance speaks with the film's director and producer, Rex Jones. Jones spent time with Holland during his last few days in office, which happened to coincide with the onset of COVID-19.
Back in 2019, I was working on a film about the Sun and Sand Motel there in downtown Jackson, which was in danger of being destroyed. Somebody told me that I needed to get in touch with Steve Holland because he used to stay there a lot. I wasn't familiar with Steve, but I did get in touch with him and really was impressed with his wit, his political history, his desire to serve the state of Mississippi. And Steve, who is a walking encyclopedia of Mississippi political history, was able to narrate that tour and draw from his wealth of stories that he has about staying at the Sun and Sand, which was Mississippi's de facto legislative frat house for decades there. Well, we were able to time that tour with the occasion of Steve moving out of the Capitol after 36 years in the Mississippi legislature. And my thinking was, what an opportunity to record 36 years, nine terms of Mississippi political history walking out the door. So that's what we did. And of course, I built out a short film about Steve Holland, Jesus Was a Democrat, that's really based around that moving out of the Capitol there. But given all that had happened with COVID, Steve losing his mother in that time, Steve being a Southern Undertaker, this theme of loss sort of emerged as I was putting the movie together. And so it's really not very political at all, but it's really about sort of Steve, the Southern Undertaker, this person who wants to do good as a civic servant, what he has done over the years, his exit from civil service there, his political career, and then his return back to the funeral home there. So it's sort of this cycle of the life and times of Steve Holland, very effective politician for many years, and a revered Southern Undertaker in the Lee County community.
In the context of this documentary, what does its title mean, Jesus Was a Democrat?
The titles of my films generally come from something that someone has said in an interview in the movie there, and so that is the case in this film also. Someone asked Steve Holland one time why he was a Democrat, and he said it didn't take him 5 seconds to answer. He said it was because he thought Jesus was a Democrat. And so that's where the title of the film comes from, which is very polarizing, obviously. My mother hates the title. I think it's a wonderful title. So anyway, I hope that doesn't scare anybody off.
What was it like being able to sit down with Steve Holland and be able to talk about his life in the legislature? Were there any stories that you took away that affected you personally?
I had three formal sit-down interviews with Steve, one about his personal life, one about his political career, and one all about his service as a Southern Undertaker there in Lee County. Each of these interviews lasted multiple hours, and there was just a wealth of storytelling that I absorbed from him. And I guess the takeaway, the main takeaway that I have from that experience, and I hope that people will have when they're watching the movie, is that Steve just has an overriding desire in all aspects of his life to just generally do good and be a good citizen, be a good person. And so that is something that affected me, that I try to walk through this world and be a blessing and not a curse. And it just reinforced that for me. And I hope that will also resonate with other people, no matter what their political affiliation is.
As a documentarian, what are you hoping that people can take away from this film?
Well, so I think I would like for people to take away that no matter what side of the aisle someone sits on, whether or not they're a Republican or a Democrat, it's very important, I think, in these divisive times to be able to reach across that aisle, to be able to empathize with what people of different political beliefs might have there and try to find that common ground. And instead of being a part of such a divisive and polarized political climate here, I would hope that we could all come together through some idea of some shared common good and lift all boats in a rising tide.
Rex Jones is creator of the short documentary Steve Holland, Jesus Was a Democrat. He and Steve Holland will be at this week's History is Lunch, that's today, at the two Mississippi Museums in Jackson at noon. Rex, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much, Kobe. I really appreciate it.
This has been Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio.